Today on Maine Calling, what it takes to be a safe driver. We're coming up on Labor Day weekend, one of the busiest times of the year on Maine roads. In anticipation, Maine law enforcement agencies have already stepped up details aimed at identifying impaired drivers. The campaign is called Drive Sober or Get Pulled Over. More than a third of all traffic fatalities involve an impaired driver from alcohol or another substance, including prescription drugs. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will tighten our seatbelt and learn ways we can all improve our driving skills. Have you been tempted to text while you're driving? Do you know the laws about when you must pull over? Tips from the experts. That's next on Maine Calling.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. As we approach Labor Day weekend, we will polish our driving skills and discuss the causes of accidents and fatalities on Maine roads. There have been far too many in recent years. My guest today, Nick Brown, Highway Safety Coordinator with the Maine Bureau of Highway Safety, and Haley Fleming, Specialist with the Maine State Police Traffic Safety Unit. He oversees drug recognition and teaches about impaired driving for the Maine Criminal Justice Academy. We invite you to join the conversation. What have you seen on the roads that worries you about other drivers' behavior? What questions do you have for the experts about safe driving practices or about Maine driving laws? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you both for joining us. Nick, it's so interesting because we're going into Labor Day weekend, which seems to me like it would be sort of a dangerous driving apex, but it's actually the month of August that is the deadliest month of the year in terms of traffic fatalities. Why is that?
Traffic fatalities, really, it's because it's nice out. If you think about it, everyone has an idea in their head of what a bad day on the roads would look like, and that's stormy and raining or snowy. So when people are driving in those kind of conditions, they naturally tend to just drive a little bit more cautiously. But when it's a nice, beautiful, sunny day, they kind of relax a bit more and throw caution to the wind, which oddly enough, isn't the right case to do. You know, you want to kind of flip that a little bit, because when it is nice and sunny, people tend to drive faster and you want to be much more aware on the road. So that's one of those common things that even I'm guilty of this before I started. I didn't think that, sunny days were the most deadliest days on the road, but simply because of the weather condition, it is.
That's so counterintuitive, so interesting. I was thinking when I read that maybe it was just because there are more people on Maine roads who are not familiar with Maine roads. More people, going the wrong way down a one-way street in Portland, or just very quickly following that GPS and switching lanes and realizing they're in the wrong place when they need to be somewhere else.
I mean, those definitely can be common factors too. Obviously, we are a tourist state, so we do have an influx of people during the summertime months. But one thing that we did notice during COVID was that even if there are less people on the road, traffic fatalities can still go up. Back in 2019, as a state, we had 157 fatalities on our roadways. But then in 2020, we went up to 163, even though less people were on the roads. And the same kind of thing happened nationwide as well. Really what it comes down to is the choices people make behind the wheel. You know, if you're going 85 in a 70, it's going to take you a lot longer to stop in the case of any type of emergency. If you're impaired behind the wheel, obviously that's going to lead to more risky behavior behind the wheel because, well, you can't really tell what's going on. Same thing with looking at your phone. All these factors come into play. And when really there's less people on the road, sometimes people tend to take that as a, well, I don't have to drive as carefully. You know, there's nobody else out there that I really need to worry about, just myself. But really, you really need to worry about yourself a lot more, because those type of behaviors of checking your phone, speeding, driving impaired, even just a little bit, leads to crashes.
So be aware on a beautiful day like this that other people may be, not being quite as alert and safe as they would be if it were dark and rainy outside. It's so interesting, Haley, because Nicholas mentioned impaired driving. I think most people think of drunk drivers when they think of impaired driving, and that is indeed a problem, but it's not the only way to be an impaired driver, is it?
No, absolutely not. I like the terminology that Nick used, impaired driving. Over the course of the last probably 15 years, people in the community have really started using the term impaired driving versus drunk driving, because impaired driving encompasses alcohol, marijuana, prescription medications, anything that impairs a person's ability to operate safely.
Are there prescription medications that maybe most people don't realize can impair their driving, but do, common ones?
Oh, absolutely. Specifically, CNS depressants, for example, which is the same category that alcohol would fall under. Many prescription medications that people are prescribed and take, even with the prescribed dosage, can have similar effects on a person's sobriety that alcohol would cause as well. And what commonly can happen is someone could take their prescribed medication that falls under the same category as alcohol and maybe only have one or two drinks that doesn't bring them up to maybe a 0.08, but they could have impairment that would be consistent with higher than that, even though a breath test would only show a point lower than a 0.08.
I have to ask you, marijuana has been legal in Maine for quite a few years. I know that during the campaign to try to legalize it, many people who are opposed to it were worried about the impact on the roads. Have we seen an impact?
Yes, all of the states that have legalized it have seen increases in impaired driving crashes where marijuana has been a factor. And in my personal experience, people don't correlate it the same as alcohol. When you really think, basically the same rules are in effect. You have to be 21. You can't use it in a public place, same as alcohol. You can't smoke it while driving, and you can't operate after being impaired from it.
And let's be clear, I think there's an urban myth out there that there's no way for police officers to test for marijuana impairment. Is that true?
Oh, no, absolutely not. Maine has, as all 50 states have, a DRE, which stands for Drug Recognition Expert Program. These are specially trained officers, troopers, deputies, game wardens that can go out and that are called when, for lack of better words, a non-trained officer encounters somebody who they believe is under the influence of marijuana. They would contact a drug recognition expert to come and sort of walk through a different series of testing that they're looking for marijuana impairment.
Tell us about Labor Day weekend and the Drive Sober or Pull Over campaign. I understand it's already underway, but it's in light of the realization that there will be a lot of cars on the road this coming weekend.
Yeah, definitely. The communities that have a lot of tourists, for example, Bar Harbor, we know is very busy during this time of year. Member Highway Safety funds police departments that apply for grant funding, and it falls under that Drive Sober, Get Pulled Over program, where they can go out and add patrols that are specifically dedicated to looking for impaired drivers. Oftentimes, police department staffing levels are pretty razor thin, and they're just handling the calls for service that are coming in, and this is an opportunity to put more officers on the road. And sometimes, even if they don't encounter an impaired person themselves, just the mere fact of police cars on the road, blue lights, other cars pulled over is a huge deterrence to other folks from taking the chance to drive impaired.
And Nick, I know that it's your department that's heading up this campaign. What would you like to add to what Haley's already said?
Yeah, just to kind of go a little bit more into it, across the whole state, we have about 32 agencies that have taken awards with us to do overtime enforcement campaigns for this. Now, just because it's 32 out of the state doesn't mean they're the only PDs that are focusing on impaired driving. Of course, everyone knows that it's going to be a busy weekend. Everyone wants to go out and enjoy the end of their summer. So they want to do so safely. And that's part of the reason why we like to fund these campaigns. It's also just to, one, remind people about impaired driving. It's something everyone knows is out there. It doesn't just happen during this time of the year, but it's a good time to just remind people about it and to make that smart, safe decision to always plan for a sober ride home. But the main focus of this is to also get people who are impaired off the road to make sure that, towns are able to do this extra enforcement in case of anybody that they do see that is driving impaired. So they can have that extra enforcement out there to get them off the road safely and securely. Because, in my eyes, if you are pulled over for impaired driving, that's one of the better, ending stories of that. It's a lot better than hearing about it as a crash the next day or that someone else was killed on our roadways because of it. So really, really important that everyone makes a smart call to just, plan ahead. Labor Day is coming up. You probably already have your plans made up for it. So make sure to book a ride share, or just have a designated driver. And even if you're just planning on having one or two drinks, why risk it? Just plan ahead for that extra safe ride home just to be, on the safe side. I hope I said safe enough.
Well, I want to ask each of you. I think most people think of themselves as a very good driver. I'm thinking of Garrison Keillor talking about, everyone here is above average, but all of us could use some tips. So, Trooper Fleming, I'll start with you. Haley, what is one tip you would give people that maybe most of us don't follow?
Well, when we think about impaired driving, sort of what people think, even if they think, well, I'm going to be extra careful, but that doesn't mean that an animal won't run out in front of you or that somebody else could hit you and be involved in a collision. So sometimes people get involved in these things and maybe it wasn't even due to their driving, but they've taken the risk. So I kind of echo what Nick said. I mean, the best answer is if you're going to consume anything that's impairing, just don't drive at all. Because I would say I've had several hundred OUI encounters myself, and the vast majority of them are all at least say that they're shocked to find out that they were over the limit. So I don't know that people, they don't oftentimes get in their car already knowing what that chemical level may be. So
All right.
the safest answer is just not to do it.
All right. And Nick, just generally speaking, what's a driving tip you can give us all?
Yeah, kind of just to reiterate what Cooper Haley said is just that maybe you are the sober driver, you're getting on the road, but you still have that habit of checking your phone too. The thing about that is like I always hear this, I can drive just fine, it doesn't matter if I'm looking at my phone or anything like that, or like if I have a drink or two or whatever. Like you said, anything can just pop out of nowhere. And when you're in that type of situation, you're in a situation where every second counts, and you want to make sure you're of clear mind and at full focus. So really making sure that your sole focus is on the wheel is, exactly what you need to do. Because if you encounter an impaired driver, that someone's coming the wrong direction from you on the interstate, if you're looking down at your phone, and then you look up and you see it coming, you have less time to react to something like that. Same thing even with speeding. That's why you want to be going the speed limit. It's not so much just to restrict the driver or anything like that. It's to give you ample time to react to anything else happening on the road because you're the good driver. Others, not so much. So you always want to play it safe when it comes to driving because it can be deadly and you want to be ready for anything that kind of happens on your trip.
And Nick, so much attention is paid on to phones, and rightly so. But it occurs to me there are other reasons people take their eyes off the road for a few seconds and maybe don't even realize they do. Maybe not that any Maine public listener would be, you know, changing radio stations, but maybe you're out of state and you're looking through radio stations. Or I'm thinking about the kids in the back seat who are being a nuisance and you're looking in the rearview mirror. It strikes me, I have had that happen where I have looked at the radio for a second and then realized with a gasp, oh my gosh, I had my eyes off the road. So I'm thinking there, it's very common.
Yeah, I mean, distracted driving is something that has been always around, even since before cell phones. Cell phones are just tend to be more of the culprit right now because, you know, as soon as you hear that ding or anything, you kind of want to know what's happening on your phone. And it just gets addicting because you never know if it's going to be good news, what the news is. So you just kind of have that that emotional response of, ooh, what's this? So that's why it's really important, though, just to, like, you know, put that away. But going back to what you said, yeah, distracted driving has always been around, and it's not really just cell phone use. You know, it can be people who do their makeup in their car, changing the radio station, which they would never change the radio station for Maine Public Radio, of course. But, you know, it could also just be something as simple as trying to just have eat something while driving, and you just lose control of the motor vehicle a little bit. You know, I learned the other weekend I should not have bought Pringles for a road trip because once you get to a certain part, you can't eat your Pringles anymore. And if you try to grab any more at the end of the container, it's not going to be a good driving experience.
Yeah, you don't want to get your hands stuck in there, do you? In that tube.
Yeah. Distracted driving really falls under as anything that really takes your mind off the wheel, your eyes off the road, and your hands off the wheel. Yeah, it can be a multitude of anything, like when it comes to distracted driving. But right now, it is more associated with cell phone use.
All right. We'll go to Rebecca, who's calling from Sabattis. Hi, Rebecca. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say it's my observation in having moved here 9 years ago that I never experienced this in any other state. But I'm experiencing here, people don't seem to care or know that the middle, you know, the middle line going down the road is not a mere suggestion because they're treating it. So I'm finding last night when my daughter and I were driving home from her place of employment, she was almost run off the road, and the person coming toward her was about a foot over the middle line, and she practically had to drive in the ditch to avoid them. So, and I'm also finding that I didn't add before, tailgating is another thing that they constantly do here.
Interesting. So, Trooper Fleming, do you have experience with seeing people, you know, straddling the line and tailgating?
Yes, absolutely. And I would say my assumption, just based on the time frame that the caller provided, 9 years, I think that this is going to really be more of a, not a geographical thing, but just a this is the evolution with the phone, the smartphone. There's a lot more people looking at their phones. I mean, we see it all the time. We do patrols. People are going down the road. They're Snapchatting. They're creating TikToks, all of these things with their phones in their cars that even 10 or 15 years ago, people were not doing. So we hear a lot from pedestrians, specifically people running, that they are almost getting run over while running down, running in the breakdown lane of the roads because of the same thing, cars crossing lines when they shouldn't be. And that's because people's attention is just too divided with their devices while operating.
Rebecca, thanks so much for your call. We do need to take a quick break. We're talking about safe driving. And yes, even though you're a safe driver, I'm sure you can get tips from today's program. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, or you can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. What does it mean to be a safe driver? What leads to accidents these days? Joining me for the hour, Haley Fleming, Maine State Police Specialist with the Traffic Safety Unit. He also teaches at the Maine Criminal Justice Academy. And Nick Brown, Highway Safety Coordinator for the Bureau of Highway Safety. We invite you to join the conversation. What are your questions about Maine traffic laws? What do you see on the road that worries you? send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Giving us a call now is Andrew Grant, who is Volunteer State Coordinator for Traffic Safety with AARP Maine. Thanks so much for calling in, Andrew.
No, thanks for having me, Jennifer.
I know that older drivers can be both at risk, but also risk factors when it comes to driving. Tell us what AARP does to educate older Mainers about driving safety, and also tell us when in your life you might want to think about doing some sort of refresher course.
Well, we have a number of programs that focus on driver safety. And the goal of all of our programs is to keep older people safely driving for as long as possible. Our core course is our Safe Driver course. Anybody can take this course. It's focused on older people. And some of the insurance companies give a discount for taking that course, and that's got to be renewed every 3 years. So to answer that question, anybody can take the class, and everybody should take the class, because when I teach it, we find that people come up to us at the end of the class and say, "Gee, I thought I knew everything. I came because of the insurance discount, but I really learned a few things about driving." And the focus of our course, because it is an AARP course and focused on older people, is the theme of change. And we have four basic units talking about change. Change in the person themselves. You talked about impairment before. We have a section on impairment that talks about how alcohol and drugs, both prescription and non-prescription, over-the-counter, affect people much more as they get older. We talk about changes in vehicles. We are not driving the same cars that we used to drive. We're driving computers with tires these days, and we have a lot of safety features in our vehicles, and we have lots of bells and whistles going off. Things vibrate, lights go on. And when people get intimidated by those, they tend to turn them off and lose the safety value. So we talk about those things in new vehicles. We actually have a whole separate course on that called SD Tech, Safe Driver Tech, that's geared toward two types of individual. One is somebody who has a car and is not certain about how to use all of these features, and then somebody else who is in the market for a vehicle and wants to know what they should include, and all of the many of these things are extra cost options, and they that course helps them identify and make decisions about what to include in a new vehicle.
Andrew, that is such a great idea for a course, because I know a lot of people who say they either ignore or turn off a lot of the safety features. They say, "I want a simple car like I used to have," even though these might be able to really help them. I want to ask you what I asked Nick and Haley before, because you said that many people come to your class and afterwards say, "Oh, I learned something I didn't know, even though I thought I knew everything." What are the maybe top two things that people didn't know that they learned and they're glad they learned?
I think the section on impairment in terms of you know, I can have a glass of wine, I can have a beer and still get into my car. That really focuses on our aging bodies and what the impact is. And I think the vehicles, the safety features in the vehicles, and I say exactly the same thing you just said. I was going to turn it off, but now that I understand what it does, I'm going to pay a little more attention to it.
Great. Well, I so appreciate you calling in, Andrew. I know that I years ago did a news story on one of the safe driving courses at AARP, and I have to say it looked like a lot of fun. So I suspect you're just as fun as an instructor as the one that I witnessed that many years ago. Andrew Grant is with AARP Maine. Thank you. Let's see. I'm going to go to an email here. This is from Inga. She says, as a regular road walker and driver, I would like to suggest that fluorescent colors become the new fashion and safety statement by pedestrians. Wherever they walk, they really work. When I walk wearing a fluorescent runner's vest, sports shirt, or hunting vest in November, I know drivers see me much sooner. And most, not all, move over far ahead of me and give me some room. It would also be nice if those cars would also slow down a bit when they see me. And then she says, student drivers need to be taught to move over and slow down when people are in the roadway walking or biking. So what do you think, Nick, of her tip? Fluorescent colors.
I think I 100% agree. Like when it comes to a lot of our fatalities, over half of those happen during nighttime, during dark, when it's dark out. And some of the time it actually happens when someone breaks down on the side of the road and they have to walk somewhere. So what we suggest is making sure you have something fluorescent in your car. So in case you do break down, you have something to throw on so someone can see you, because you don't really dress for a breakdown or anything like that. They just happen. So you always want to make sure you're prepared, and having like a flashlight and like bright colored clothing of any kind is really helpful, because on the driver's side, you know, drivers also don't want to hit somebody. And it gets really scary when you're coming up over a hill or something and you do see a pedestrian in the road at the last second, giving you less time to react. So any way that you can make yourself brighter and well-known, as we are moving into fall now, days are going to get start getting shorter, to make yourself more visible, that's the right choice to make. So I 100% agreed with, you know, fashionable fluorescent clothing. That's kind of hard to say.
But, and this is an interesting idea too, Nick. Yeah, I mean, I think that what Inga was talking about is people going on a walk or going on a bike ride, but you have like the idea of having some in your car as part of your safety gear, so that if something happens and you're unexpectedly out at night, that you are visible. Interesting. On the line with us now, Dan Bassett, Deputy Director of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine. Thanks so much, Dan, for calling in.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
You know, I know that Bike Maine focuses not only on bicycle safety, but also on pedestrians and vehicle drivers. Tell us why you address all those areas and what kind of data you've been keeping in the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons why BCM does also support pedestrian initiatives and pedestrian safety is usually whatever benefits pedestrians will also benefit cyclists. So they kind of go hand in hand sometimes. And a lot of the rules are kind of the same when you are, you know, trying to be safe on your bike or being safe as a walker, you know, being seen, staying to the right side of the road. These are all kind of go, you know, hand in hand with each other to stay safe. So in terms of data collecting, you know, one of the big things we really track is pedestrian crashes and bicycle crashes and fatalities that go with it. You know, this is something we keep a track of just to make sure we are staying on top of what the trends are and knowing if this, you know, if this is a year fatalities and accidents are increasing or decreasing. It's always really important for us to know these things.
Mm-hmm. Dan, I'm going to go to one of our callers because I think her question is more for you than for our other guests. I'm going to go to Katie calling from Newcastle. Hi, Katie. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Katie Huntington. I'm from Newcastle. And I'd like to add to what's being said right now by the BCM rep that there is a 3-foot rule for people from out of state may not be aware of that. They're supposed to give at least 3 feet to any pedestrian or biker they're passing on the road. Hand in hand with that is slowing down. I live on a rural road with no shoulder and, you know, blind hills and curves. And my husband won't ride it with me. I ride earlier in the mornings, and when one, there's less traffic, and two, there's less wind, for better safety. And I have a taillight and a headlight, and I dress for visibility. But I'd like, to remind people that drivers of bicycles are allowed on the road just as motorists are, and we need to work together to keep us both safe. I therefore do work with BCM to do some bike rodeos and such to help kids learn how to ride safely.
Yeah, well, Katie, thank you so much. Thank you for that call and that important reminder. We've done entire Maine Calling programs on bicycles and bicycle safety, but always a good reminder. Dan, I'm going to turn her question around a little bit, though, because we also hear the opposite, that sometimes bicycles make it difficult on cars, especially in urban areas. So what advice... what would you add to what Katie said about how drivers of cars can be more safe for cyclists. But what other things would you say for cyclists to just help keep traffic safe generally?
Yeah, I think Katie brought up a very good point about the 3-foot rule, and that law just means that, you know, drivers need to give cyclists 3 feet. What people don't understand that the cyclists can also have 3 feet from the edge of the road as well, and that can also increase depending on how safe the side of the road is. Usually what the law says is that cyclists need to stay to the right of the road, as far right of the road as is safe and prudent. So, you know, if 2 feet into the right of the road, there's a giant pothole, cyclists are allowed and should be allowed to go further into the lane or take the lane. When it comes to riding in urban areas and dense areas, I think it's important for cyclists to ride in a way that's safe for them and for drivers to respect that, but also for cyclists to understand when they need to move over to the side more to also not impede traffic. We are all using the streets together. It's important that we all work together to make sure they're safe.
Yeah, and Dan, I think sometimes people don't realize when they are visible and when they're not visible, when you might be in a blind spot or not in the place that the driver's looking, correct?
That's definitely possible, too. I mean, it's important to, if you're at an intersection, if you're trying to make a turn and you have a driver that's stopped on their side, make sure you're trying to make eye contact with them, over-communicate. The cyclists, we don't have turn signals, but we have hand signals. That's really important for us to communicate and make sure drivers know what our intentions are. We like to say that, you want to be predictable. You don't want to surprise drivers. But it's also for drivers to be aware that, bicycles might need to move suddenly sometimes to stay safe. So,
Yeah, to avoid that pothole or that broken piece of glass. Katie, thank you so much for your call. And Dan Bassett, thank you so much for joining the conversation. Dan Bassett with the Bicycle Coalition of Maine. And, I'm thinking about Haley when he's talking about be consistent, that Dan Bassett was talking about being a cyclist, but I know that that applies in other ways as well. For example, tractor trailers, people driving big trucks often, it's scary for them to be on the same road with drivers that are not consistent and being erratic. Yes. I mean, what do we hear from tractor trailer drivers about what we can all do to make them safer?
I mean, I believe that tractor trailer truck drivers are considered professional drivers. They spend all of their hours driving on the roads. They witness a lot that they report to us. I think probably the biggest complaint for them is other vehicles crowding them, not taking into consideration how much longer it takes for them to slow down, how much longer it takes for them to make a simple turn. And sometimes we'll see them occupying a lane to the left when they need to make a right turn because they need that much distance, where other folks will line up in that right lane and then it prevents them from being able to turn. So to summarize, what I think the biggest complaint is probably not giving them adequate turning room and braking room.
We'll go to Nick.
Oh, I was just going to say, we are creating some new PSAs when it comes to commercial motor vehicles as well, to better educate and give the perspective of the commercial motor vehicle driver themselves. One thing also is just to be more mindful of their blind spots. Commercial motor vehicles, especially tractor trailers and everything, have much larger blind spots than anybody else. So if you get too far close behind them, they can't see you when you're right behind them, when you're, passing them as well, you might be in their blind spot there too, because like I said, it's a lot larger blind spot. So you just want to be extra careful when you're around a commercial motor vehicle, because they can't always see exactly where you are.
All right. Let's see here. I'm going to go to Kim. Kim just wrote, as I was sitting at a stoplight listening to your program on driving safety, the car in front of me just started driving right through a red light. I thought I'd let you know because it's everywhere and happens all the time lately. And yes, I pulled over to send this email. So thank you, Kim, for that. I wanted to ask you really quickly, Haley, about some things that are laws that people may not know are laws. We've talked on this program before about if you see flashing lights, you must pull over, correct? What about when people, what are some other things that people don't seem to know are the law that you find when you pull people over?
I would love to touch on this. Probably one of the most common things is vehicles traveling on the interstate in the left-hand lane, or what some people may call the fast lane or the passing lane. The best rule of advice is just to consider that it's illegal to drive in the left lane unless you are passing another car. If you're in the left lane and there's nobody to the right of you, then that's technically a law violation. And we see it all the time. It also leads to a lot of road rage. People will be in the left lane, maybe going the speed limit, not passing a car on the right. People are stacking up behind them. And then that leads to drivers acting out. And I think that's a lot of people don't know that unless you're overtaking or passing a vehicle, you must remain in the right lane on any two lane road.
We'll go to Pat, who's calling from Kearsage, New Hampshire. Hi, Pat. Go ahead.
Hi. I just have a quick comment I'd like to have their opinions on when they're talking about their safety tips. Mine is, could they just talk a little bit about not tailgating and what the safest distance is for cars and motorcycles? Because the thing that always gets me going when I'm driving is people get so close to the back of my car that if an animal ran out in front of me, I step on the brake, they're going to rear end me. And I just think people have lost the art of not tailgating. And they think if there's space between cars, then they're not going fast enough. And I'll listen to their answers off the air.
Pat, thank you. Nick, thoughts about that?
Yeah, if I can remember correctly, it's like a couple car lanes back, about one or two typically. And if it's in worse conditions, increase it a good amount because shopping distance obviously is going to change a little bit during the wintertime months. And like she said, yeah, you always want to give that extra space because you never really know what's going to happen on the roadways. And there's nothing wrong with a little bit of extra space between you and the other person. No one likes it when you can't see out your back window because all you see is a giant F1 Ford truck. I can't think of the brand, right? Blocking your whole rear view mirror because they're just right there. I always say a couple car lanes at least.
Yeah, I feel like I have more room to maneuver if there's more space in front of me because you never know what's going to happen. You never know if something is going to fall off somebody's vehicle or if, like you said, an animal is going to run out in the car, in the road. Pat, thank you so much for calling in. We do need to take another break. We are talking about driving safely on Main Calling. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Main Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are talking about driving safely. With me today, traffic safety specialist Haley Fleming with the Maine State Police and highway safety coordinator Nick Brown with the Bureau of Highway Safety. It's not too late to share your comments and questions. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. Here's an email from Tony. In driver's education, I was taught that cars merging onto the freeway had to yield to the traffic on the freeway. Of course, it's the friendly thing to do if you are already on the freeway to move over to someone for someone merging. This makes sense to me, since it is safer for the merging driver to adjust their speed than those on the freeway. It seems to me things are opposite now. Most drivers feel it is the person on the freeway's responsibility to adjust their speed and not the person merging. They just barrel onto the freeway without even looking. Is there a law for this? Am I wrong in my thinking? Haley.
Yes, absolutely. He's correct. The people that are already in commerce, traveling on the freeway, they own that lane, and it's up to the person merging onto the interstate system to yield around them. There's no formal obligation for the person in the lane to merge over. As he said, it may be the polite thing to do, but it is up to the merging person to yield to the traffic that's already out there.
And so just to be clear, it's the polite thing to do to move over, but it is not the law. You don't have to move over.
Correct.
Okay. We'll go to Scott calling from Portland. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Hi. I guess I just wanted to emphasize or discuss a little bit more about tailgating because basically tailgating is an issue of speeding because if you're t- tailgating somebody at one car length, if the distance is one car length at 10 miles per hour, then that's perfectly fine. But if you're doing that one car length at 60 miles an hour, then that becomes an issue of basically speeding too fast. So tailgating is really speeding. But the issue I also have with it that I'd like to see is the system we have in place now is your car, if you have the a distance sensor, it will alert the perpetrator that they're potentially tailgating, but it does nothing really for the victim. So I would like to see some system that would make some repercussion. I know insurance companies reward drivers for safe driving, and so maybe that would come into play, but maybe also some sort of violation, a traffic violation or something, if they're, tailgating, which again is speeding. And the other issue I think that sort of plays into that is that cars have become so much higher performance that has also come, that hasn't come without a cost, which is that cars accelerate much faster. They go from 0 to 60 in 2, 3, 4 seconds or whatever, which is ridiculous. And most people don't need to go that fast. So maybe it requires some adjustment in their driving patterns. And I think that has also come from the improved performance and also the efficiency of cars. They've gotten better, but this is sort of an unintended consequence, I think, is they've also gotten much higher performing.
Scott, thank you for that question. Haley Fleming, I want to ask you, is it against the law to tailgate? Can you pull somebody over for following somebody else too closely?
Yes, there is a chargeable offense for following too closely. I wouldn't say that people get pulled over for it a lot. The standard rule of thumb is 10 miles an hour, one car length. So, you know, for example, 60 miles an hour, six car lengths is appropriate.
All right. Thanks, Scott, for that. Nick, I want to ask you, cars, the newer cars, have a lot of safety features. And a lot of cars are designed so that you can't hit something. And I'm wondering if you are seeing any improvement in safety statistics as cars have all of this smart technology.
Smart technology is pretty interesting, and which, even though it is there to help and everything, if someone doesn't like it, they're just going to turn it off. If they can find a way to do that, it is important to leave on, especially with blind spot indicators. It is kind of tough to see if they're making that much of a difference, though, because really it does come down to the driver behavior and action. You know, if you're not paying attention, you're just going to hit something regardless. You know, even if there's something beeping or flashing at you, people are just going to ignore it and they're still going to hit something if they're like paying attention to their phone or something else. I do think they're all great to have. And I think, you know, backup cameras, I can't go back after having one. That one is just a phenomenal thing to have, because if you're just backing out of a parking spot, it's a lot easier to tell if someone's coming from either side, just with that little bit of extra, just from that camera. Also, another great thing with new safety features is just like people don't really realize the improvements that have been made alongside with your seatbelt, in which stuff like crumple zones are really effective, in which work in line with your seatbelt. Same thing with airbags, which have been around forever, but you know, those are a safety feature that helps as well in the event of a crash. But as for safety features helping to prevent crashes, I'm sure they do. But unfortunately, when it comes to our fatal crash data, we haven't seen that much of an improvement. This year so far, with fatal crashes, as of today, we're at 105 traffic fatalities on our roads. Which, you know, people tend to hear about fatal crashes in a vacuum. They'll hear about one or two at a time and then go about their day. But once again, 105 as of August 26, as of today.
Mm. Nick, so, 105, how many of those were the people who were killed, either a pedestrian or a bicyclist, and how many were people who were in a vehicle?
I don't have the exact breakdown as of today, but as of August 1st, we had 11 pedestrian fatalities.
Okay, so most of those were people in their cars. And Trooper Fleming, I've been told by troopers before that almost all traffic fatalities are people not wearing their seatbelts. Is that still true?
Yeah, I would defer to Nick to see if he has the updated stats, but in my personal experience, the vast majority of fatal crashes that I've personally been to, people were not wearing their safety belts.
Yeah, and then whenever you hear of a car when an accident when someone was ejected from a vehicle, that's a sure sign, right?
Sure, yes.
Nick, is there something you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, really, it's just like what you guys said. A lot of our fatal crashes are still unbelted crashes. I don't have the exact statistics. Unfortunately, we have two FARS analysts, and FARS, I can't remember the acronym, but they analyze fatal crashes. One is at a conference this week, while the other one is taking his first vacation in like a decade.
That's okay.
So
We'll forgive him. But it is true that there's a very high percentage of people still not wearing their seatbelt, and that many people who were killed would be alive today if they had been.
And to kind of go with that, Maine, when it comes to buckling up, we actually do a really great job as a state as a whole. Last year, our seatbelt usage rate was at 94%. So really, if you're thinking about it, only 6% of people are unbelted. But then if you break that down even more to how many are fatal crashes are unbelted, it's kind of a scary amount because really you're increasing your risk of dying in a crash by not wearing your seatbelt by quite a bit. It usually comes down to like a 50-50 shot is kind of what it pans out to. But really, if it takes a second to buckle up, why leave it up to a coin flip, you know? Like you just buckle up and just be safe about it. I don't
And
know.
let
To
me
me,
throw
it's just
something at you that I've heard from other people I know who don't buckle up, and I think there's still a few of them that say, "Hey, I don't want to be trapped if something happens." Haley, what have you ever encountered something where somebody was not able to get out of their car because they were trapped by their seatbelt?
I can't think of a case, but I have seen many cases. The unit that I work in is handling a fatal car crash where someone was ejected and died just over the weekend. So, really, for the most part, it's the vehicle is designed to keep you safe on the inside, not the outside, you know.
I'll go to Frank, who's calling from Southwest Harbor. Hi, Frank, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Actually, still late morning. He already talked about 10 miles an hour. One car length for every 10 miles an hour. The other thing I want to talk about, and you haven't mentioned it, is impaired driving, whether drugs or alcohol. I had a friend who was killed by a drunk driver, hit him from behind at 100 miles an hour, and the driver had already killed another person 2 years earlier. He lost his license for 1 year. I think what should happen is in every state, if you're a drunk driver and you cause a fatality, the state, or even if you're just drunk driving, the state should seize your car. It's impounded for 30 days. Then you get it back. If you do it a second time, you lost the car. If it's a brand new car and you got 3 years of payments, too bad. The state now owns your car. You've been arrested twice for drunk driving. And I'd like to see much tougher standards for impaired drunk driving.
Frank, thank you so much for calling in. Let's see, we'll go to John, who's calling from Deer Isle. John, we're tight on time, but go right ahead.
I'll be very quick, and my wife taught me this, and I have a tailgater now. I will put on my emergency flashers, and they almost always back off, and you can almost feel them feeling embarrassed.
All right. So, Nick, what do you think of John's trick to put on the emergency flashers when he's being tailed?
I'll have to try it the next time I have a tailgater, just to see if it works for me.
All right, John, thanks so much. And we'll go to Chelsea in Saco. Again, Chelsea, tight on time. If you could be quick, that'd be great. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I'd just like to hear some discussion on how design facilitates the driving behaviors we want to see versus blaming driver behavior when they're given a poorly designed, built environment. And I say this as a person who advocates for traffic safety in my community regularly. And I was even featured in a Portland Press Herald article recently where I was labeled a NIMBY for asking for safer conditions in my neighborhood for bicyclists and pedestrians because we've had two fatalities in downtown Saco in the last couple years. So
Yeah, well, Chelsea, I'm sorry we're not going to have time for a discussion on the topic, but your point of view is your perspective has indeed some food for thought for later programs on Maine Calling and maybe for some personal discussions around the dinner table. I want to thank my guests for joining us today, Nick Brown, Highway Safety Coordinator with the Maine Bureau of Highway Safety, and Haley Fleming, a specialist with the Maine State Police Traffic Safety Unit. He teaches about impaired driving for the Maine Criminal Justice Academy. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, there is a new definitive guide about the amphibians and reptiles of Maine. We will talk with its authors. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.